Ben Helfgott, Reel 13.
So after they send off this group, they then declared that they're not sending any more people to Buchenwald because there was a lot of bombing and the reception and so on. So that was it. And when I was told that there are no more transports to Buchenwald, then I stopped thinking about my appendix, and the pain went. This was a case where I discovered the meaning of autosuggestion, and and it's been something that stood me in good stead. And later on, when I was doing sport, with sport injuries and so on, and with other things. So it was an unfortunate lesson at the wrong time, but I certainly made use of it later on in my life. Well, spring was in the air, air raids were in abundance, the German morale was really getting very low, and with it we were believing that it's coming to an end. But yet there were some amongst us who said, no matter what, they'll never let us out, they'll still kill us.
What had Christmas been like in the camp? The Germans celebrate Christmas in the camp.
Well, they did, yes. Yes, and we had the day off. So that was a great bonus. And the only thing that they did for us was that we, instead of standing in the on the Appell, as they call it, Appellplatz, you know what Appellplatz means?
A place where roll call took place.
Instead of having our roll call, they made us stand there for 2.5 hours and sing songs and so on. So that was what he gave us to do, that man. That was the goodwill of Christmas. And he was no youngster; he was an older man, but nevertheless, he still did not have a spirit of Christmas. He probably had it for somebody else, but not for us.
Did roll call take place every morning?
Every morning.
How long would it usually last?
Well, anything from half an hour to 3/4 of an hour. They counted us again, marched us up, down.
What would happen if anybody was missing? Or did that ever happen?
No, in Germany nobody was missing because, well, there were people, there were all the time fewer and fewer people. They didn't take any, all they wanted to know how many people are going out and how many people are coming back, and that was all. I mean, if there were only 50 people going out, they wanted 50 people to go back. But very often 50 people did not come back because people dropped on the road. We were decimated in a very short time. When we arrived there, there was a Hungarian group there. And they were in such a state of demoralization that within a month of our staying there, they came earlier. And they were inexperienced because the Germans really deported them in 1944. So up to 1944 they lived under reasonable conditions, as reasonable as it can be. I mean, one wouldn't call that reasonable in normal life. But reasonable in comparison to what we had to endure. And so then when they were sent to the camps, they were fresh. And they sort of still believed that the Germans said, if you work hard, we will reward you. But the Germans did not reward anyone, whether they worked hard or they didn't work hard. And we learned this very early, and we learned how to conserve our strength. But they did not learn how to conserve their strength. And they were dying much faster. And by about February, there was nobody left. And I was told that there were about 500 of these Hungarians who were sent to this camp. Those, the few that were left, were in such a condition that they sent them back to Buchenwald. And they must have died in Buchenwald on the way, probably.
Were you graded as prisoners by different colour stars or
yes,
symbols.
Yes, we were Jews. I mean, there were the political ones, and there were the homosexual ones, and they were the ordinary criminals. They were green. The criminal was green. Red was political, and we had yellow, which was a Jew.
And they're just a square of material, or was
yes,
it?
Yes, over the material, the number, and the piece of material.
Was your number in any way marked on your body?
No, it was on my chest. So, as I said, we heard that Breslau was taken and that towns nearby were being taken, and then one day we were ordered. They ordered half of the camp inmates to be sent away, and I was very lucky that I was not in that group. I was left behind, and half of my friends, people that I made friends of, were sent away, and we thought, well, maybe we will be the lucky ones and we'll be liberated on the spot here. But a week later, exactly a week later, they then ordered us to march to the railway station, and once again, they packed us into these ubiquitous cattle tracks, and off we went. But this was a journey like no other journey, because no sooner have we moved out, and there was an air raid. And when there was an air raid, the German guards did not like the idea of being in the train, so they went off and they opened up the trains and they let us off as well. So we could have run away, but we didn't know the terrain. Here we were really in a strange country, and our clothing was in tatters. Our face, it was all written on us who we were. So where could we run? And we knew we had no one. I mean, if we didn't have any friends in Poland, we certainly did not have any friends here. So there was no point running. Our safety was being together. Well, at least that is what I thought. My father obviously did not think like this when he ran away. But we started off, and every few hours the train stopped, and every few hours we had to get down, and so it went on and on and on, and we were traveling backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and we recognized that we didn't go very far, because we traveled one day, and then the following day we were back in the same place where we were before.
Why was this?
Well, because the Germans themselves did not know where to go. You see, the ring was tightening. The Allies were coming in from all sides. And the German command was breaking up. The orders were not coming through. And especially now that we were on a train, and they were ordered to go somewhere, and suddenly they discovered that they can't get this way anymore, because number one, the railways have been destroyed, and number two, already this place was already taken. So they thought, okay, let's go back, let's try to find some other way. And then they tried to phone, and when they phoned, they discovered that at this stage, this was April. It was April the 14th, when we were ordered to be evacuated from that place. And remember, by April the 14th, Buchenwald was already taken. Buchenwald was liberated, I believe, on the 11th of April. But there was no way to go back to Buchenwald. Bergen-Belsen was liberated on the 15th. So a day later, there was no way to go to Bergen. So the only place that there was still open to go was Czechoslovakia. That was the only country where where nobody was there yet. So they decided to move us to Czechoslovakia, especially that there was a concentration camp there. And that concentration camp was called Theresienstadt. So we were now being moved towards Theresienstadt. But they couldn't go straight there because of the disruption on the railways. We traveled for 7 days. And on the 21st of April, we stopped outside Theresienstadt, and we knew, and we were told that we weren't sure what was going to happen. But on the train with us, in the train, were two Gestapos. Well, they were not the Gestapo of the ordinary type, because they were conscripted into the Gestapo only recently. They were older Germans, maybe they would have been different 6 months ago or 5 years ago, but at this stage they showed some humanity. And especially, they were very nice to me and to another boy. And they gave us a little bit of extra food. One of them even gave me his address in Berlin. I remember the street Charlottenburg. And he told me, I don't remember the number, and he told me that when the war finishes, he'd be very welcome, I'll be very welcome in his house. So, but I remembered about all my friends from before, how nice they were, and when it came to the, how quickly they changed. So I was listening, and I wanted to believe, but in my heart, I was very skeptical. So when we stopped not far from Theresienstadt, they suggested that we go, that two or three people come with him, and they go to the local farmer and get some food for us. And he took me with him, and we went to the nearest place. We knocked at the door, and a Czech came out, very nice, jovial farmer. And we told him that we are in the transport here, we don't know where we're going to go. And we told him that the Gestapo who's with us seemed to be very nice, that they don't mean any harm, and that could they give us some food.
Did he look shocked in any way at your appearance?
Oh yes, they looked at us and they immediately went in and he gave us whatever he could. Gave us 2 pails of potatoes and bread, all kinds of things. Well, the 3 of us who were there, we were so hungry that we immediately started eating when we were on the spot. And, of course, we came back and we shared out, I think, exactly what we had amongst the people in our wagon. And the following day, we were ordered to get off the train, and the train drew in to Theresienstadt, and we were ordered to get out. Before that, the two guards went away, and they wished us good luck, and they thought that everything would be all right, that the war would soon be over. And he turned around to me and said, "Don't forget, you'll always be welcome in my home. I've given you the address. Don't forget." So we arrived in Theresienstadt after traveling for 7 days. Already we were not too clean. But at this time we could relieve ourselves, because every time there was an air raid, it was easy to find a place. It was not like previous times. Also, it was now much warmer. It was April. It was not December. And it was much, much easier traveling. Now, there were quite a lot of people who died on the transport. Now, what was interesting was that when we came into Theresienstadt, the people who were sent out the week before us came in at the same time with us. And what we saw, we could not believe our eyes, because they came in, nearly three quarters of them dead. We were very, very lucky, because what happened? To start off with, they were traveling for 14 days and they had no food, all squashed in. And somehow they had a much more difficult and tougher ride. And many, 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 many people died there. And they were in a terrible condition. Our transport didn't look so bad. But when we got in, of course, we were told once again, take off your clothing. Of course, Theresienstadt inside was run by the inmates as well. But they were Jewish inmates, all of them. Mainly Czech and some German.
What condition were the inmates in?
In Theresienstadt, the ones whom we met. Well, they seemed all right. They didn't seem like they were anything like what we've seen in the past few months.
They
were more like what we were like when we were in our camp in Poland. And what's more, we arrived to Theresienstadt and suddenly we were in a town, because Theresienstadt is a town. And we haven't been in a town for the past 3 years. The last time we were in a town, in its buildings, was in 1942-43, when it was a small ghetto. So over 2 years we didn't see a town. Suddenly we were in a town. We saw a town. And we saw people who were telling us not to be so impulsive, not to be so jumpy, and not to be afraid, and to be patient. And they kept saying, "Teure Leute, seid vernünftig, dear people, why, be patient, ihr bekommt alles, you get everything." And I was so naive that I said, "Everything? And do you do sport here? Do you play table tennis?" And the man looked at me and he thought really that I was a goner. But this was the genuine question of a young boy who took the man literally, simply saying, "If you get everything, can you play?" But that also revealed a state of mind. Now, when I look back at it, it meant that I really was not so hungry anymore. I could not think about this 2 or 3 months before. You see, that on that train journey with the guards being nice to me, giving me the extra food, and that last lot of food that we got from the Czech farmer, all that made me feel that much easier. So that when I arrived, whilst I was still thinking about food, I could still think in terms of something else. And since sport was something that I always loved, that was on my mind. And table tennis was a game that I also loved. So he really looked at me that I was a goner. He says, "Yes, we do everything here." Anyway, we were taken in. We had our showers. We got clean clothing. And that was a fantastic relief.
Were you deloused?
Oh, yes, we were deloused, absolutely. They put some stuff over us, you know, all that with a brush. And I felt rejuvenated. And then we were taken to barracks, because they had barracks there. They also had wooden barracks. They had buildings. You know, there were barracks before the war. There were military barracks, actually. The Redenstadt was a fortress. It was built. It was Maria Theresa, Queen Maria Theresa, and it was it was built on sort of the Turkish style. You know, you've seen the Turkish inside a big, they get the big, huge building. And inside you have a courtyard, and around that you've got balustrades and so on. You've seen it, I'm sure, sort of Turkish style. This is what it looks like. But they also had wooden barracks. And they sent us to the wooden barracks. And that again was a great relief. Because in the barracks, in the buildings, it was a very oppressive, you know, sort of you walk into a huge place, you feel like closed in. But the barracks that we were in was like in the fields. And this, as I told you, was spring. And outside, where the barracks were, not far away, were the Sudeten Mountains. So there was a beautiful view. And the fresh air. And also the barracks were not exactly a hotel. But they were reasonably clean. Once again, we allocated to sleep two in a bunk. And but you didn't have to get up in the morning to go to work. There was no work there.
Were the beds any more comfortable?
They were no more comfortable, the beds. But I didn't have to get up in the morning. For the first time for three years, I didn't have to get up in the morning at 5 o'clock. And for the first few days, I just slept as much as I could. And of course we walked around and we were listening in, because the rumors were in abundance all around.
Who were the guards then?
Pum?
Who were the guards? Were they Germans?
German Gestapo, of course. Now really, what the Germans were preparing to do, we were not aware what was awaiting us. But they were building a crematorium. And that was the sign, that was going to be the final denouement. That is where we were all going to meet with our final death. But the commandant of Theresienstadt obviously was thinking of survival too. And he alerted the Red Cross that what is happening. And he himself was delaying the completion of the crematorium.
Who was building the crematorium?
Which Germans.
With Jewish workers?
Yes. But he was deliberately sabotaging it. And in fact, he got free passage to Switzerland.
And this was the camp commandant?
Yes. And lucky for us, the guest chamber was not completed. And
how did you know this was happening? It was this afterwards that you found?
We found out afterwards. I didn't know what was going on at the time. There were rumors, and what was happening. Day after day, new transports were arriving from everywhere. And suddenly, I was meeting up with my old friends, who I left behind when we were sent to Buchenwald. And most of them were left behind in another camp, because only 300 of us were sent to Buchenwald. The rest was left in another camp in Czechoslovakia. And whilst I was in Theresienstadt, in Schlieben, I used to think about my friends and about all those people who were left in Czechoslovakia. And I thought, weren't they lucky that they were left there? Because I was absolutely certain that they were liberated, because Czechoslovakia was liberated 1 month later. But what happened? Now I discovered... that as the Russians were approaching Częstochowa, they were all deported in the last minute, and they finished up in Buchenwald. And from Buchenwald they were sent to different camps. And again, thousands of people died from our camp where we originally from the two camps where we were in our hometown, where we were 1,000 and where I was, and 800 in another one, 1,800. From the 1,800, in a matter of 5 months, by the time the war was finished, only 400 survived. In 4 months. And few of them died from, there was no gas chambers anymore. They merely died from starvation and exhaustion.
Did you ever ask people who you'd meet from Buchenwald what happened to you?
Oh, I never stopped asking. As people were coming in and I was seeing them, the first thing I used to ask, what camp were you? Where were you? Especially people who were from my hometown. Did you by any chance come across my father? And then one day a friend of mine came to me. One of the boys with whom I was chummed up in Terenstadt, came to me and said, "There's somebody who wants to see you. He can tell you about your father." I didn't like it. I went to see him with a very heavy heart. This man was an older man. Well, at least to me, he was an older man. Remember, I was 15, so if he was 40 or something like this, he was an older man. So he looked at me and he said to me, "You're a young boy and you've got a lot in front of you. And I want to tell you the truth. I don't want you to live with any illusion." He says, "I was together with your father in the same camp. We were marching, you see. Not everybody was on trains. The Germans didn't have trains everywhere. And where they didn't have trains, they just ordered people to go on marches. And there were these long marches, and many, many people died on these marches. This was even worse, on these marches. Now, when they got to Czechoslovakia, my father and a few people decided to make a run for it because they were told that just a couple of miles away were the Americans. So they made a run for it. They were caught by old Germans. The last few months of the war, the Germans enlisted the very young boys of 13, 14 and sent them to the front. And the very old ones, they enlisted to do the home guard, so that they were guarding everything to make sure that the Reich is protected. And these old men took their job very seriously. Well, they caught my father and a few other people, and apparently they shot them. This man said to me, "Now look here, I have not seen it, so I cannot say that your father was actually killed. But according to what I heard the shots, and we were told that they were all caught. And it would have been a miracle if your father survived." So I accepted his version. And once again, I didn't see anybody, I didn't hear anything. I went on my bunk and I cried for a whole night and a whole day, and I just didn't move. I knew that was it. And every time I think about it, I really have never come to terms with that, because he was really an indestructible man, a man with tremendous courage. And